Chapter 7. Provis. I was 23 now, and Herbert was away one miserable, stormy night when someone knocked on our door. My heart pounding, I don't know why, I opened it to find an older man with long, gray hair smiling and stretching out his hand. I asked who he was.
"Well, I'm disappointed, but it's been a long time," said the man at the door. "May I come in?"
I invited him in, now thinking there was something familiar about him. He turned to me and said,
"Pip, my boy, I'll never forget how you helped me down by the marshes."
I gasped, now recognizing him as my convict.
"But what are you doing here? My situation is different, you know." "Yes, you're a gentleman now, I know," he smiled.
"What do you mean?"
"Come on, Pip. Who do you think made you a gentleman?"
"What?" I sat down hard as understanding hit me. Here stood my benefactor. It had never been Miss Havisham, and that meant... When I had composed myself somewhat, I began to question him. He said his name was Abel Magwitch, but I could call him Provis, a name he had used on his way back from Australia. He had been sent to a prison there, but after getting out, he had worked on a sheep farm. Then he bought the farm and made a fortune, the money I had been living on. Now he had come to see me, though if he were caught in England, he would be hanged.
"Now, who'd believe I've made a genuine gentleman?" he cried.
Then Provis asked me to read to him. Confused, I did, while he looked on with a pride of possession that chilled me, and muttered, "A gentleman," every now and again. Not knowing what to do, I gave him Herbert's bed for the night. Then I sat down, too stunned to think clearly, but slowly beginning to understand the wreck that my life and dreams now were. Miss Havisham's intentions toward me were all a mere dream. Estella was not meant for me. I was just a tool to sting greedy relations, a model with a mechanical heart to practice on. And as I realized I had abandoned Joe for all this, a sense of my worthlessness filled me. I knew I could never undo what was done. I slept restlessly. When I awoke, I decided to pretend Provis was my uncle if anyone asked. Then I went out to get some food. On my way out, I tripped over a man squatting in the stairs, and he immediately ran away. Gripped with fear that Provis had already been discovered, I went back up and locked the door. When Herbert returned, I told him the story in tears. He was astonished and supported me fully when I said I could not take another penny from Provis. Herbert even offered me a job at Clarriker's, not knowing I had helped him get his own job. After some discussion, we decided to find out more from Provis and then make a plan. "We want to know about that man on the marshes and about you," I said at breakfast, and Provis told us his story. Abandoned when he was young, he had begged and stolen to survive, so he was forever in and out of jail. He worked when he could, but almost no one would give him work. About 20 years ago, around when I went through a really hard time with a woman and... Provis paused for a minute, tears in his eyes. Finally, he continued, "Anyway, I began to work for Compeyson, the other man you saw in the marshes, whose game was pretending to be a gentleman and stealing from the rich. He had another partner named Arthur, but Arthur was being eaten alive by guilt. Something about some rich woman they'd cheated. Compeyson's wife looked after Arthur, just to keep him from talking to the police. I was over one night when Arthur came down, scared and crying. 'My sister's here,' he said, 'dressed in white, with drops of blood where her heart's broke. You broke it, and she said she's come to get me.' Then he stood up straight and stiff for a moment, and he died." I should have taken warning. That Compeyson was cold and mean, a real dark spirit. We eventually got caught, and he betrayed me, played the gentleman and claimed I was the leader. The judge gave me a much harder sentence, which I was serving when I escaped and met you," he said, shaking as he finished his story. Herbert wrote something on a piece of paper. "Miss Havisham's half-brother's name was Arthur. Compeyson's the man who broke her heart." Herbert and I realized we could not keep Provis safe. We decided I should take him abroad, but for now, we put him in a quiet hotel close by. Before going abroad, I wanted to visit Estella and Miss Havisham. I found that Estella had gone to Miss Havisham's, so I took the next coach to my old town. When I stopped in at the hotel restaurant to eat, I was surprised to see Drummle there.
"I'm going to dine at the ladies tonight," he told to the waiter, though he looked at me the whole time and smiling triumphantly.
Angry now and unable to eat, I headed to Miss Havisham's. I found Miss Havisham and Estella sitting in their usual old places. I looked squarely at Miss Havisham.
"I'm as miserable as you wanted me to be. I've discovered who my benefactor is, and it's an unhappy discovery, though I can't say any more since it's someone else's secret."
"So?" asked Miss Havisham.
"Why did you let me believe you were my benefactor? Was that kind?"
"Who am I that I should be kind?" she said, raising her voice.
"But you allowed your relatives to think that too."
"I allowed all of you to believe what you wanted. You made your own traps."
"Yes, but I've gotten to know Mr. Pocket and Herbert, and they're different. They're kind and honest."
She looked at me closely.
"What do you want for them?"
I turned red as I explained my inability to finish making the payments that would get Herbert a partnership.
She looked into the fire, then back at me.
"What else?"
"Estella," I said, turning.
"You know I love you, that I've loved you long and dearly." Estella looked at me blankly and shook her head.
"I know you'll never be mine, Estella, but I have loved you ever since I first saw you. It would have been cruel of Miss Havisham to torture a poor boy all these years. I don't think she realized what she was doing."
Listening, Miss Havisham put her hand to her heart.
"When you say you love me," said Estella, "I understand the words, but I don't feel anything. I've tried to warn you."
"Yes," I said miserably, "but I hoped you couldn't mean it."
"It's in the nature formed within me. I treat you differently by saying so much. I can do no more."
"Is Drummle going to eat here tonight?" I asked.
"Yes," she replied, surprised. "You cannot love him, Estella."
"I've told you I can't love anyone, but why not tell you the truth? I'm going to marry him."
I felt such pain hearing those words, but I struggled to control myself. I saw that Miss Havisham looked upset as she watched me.
"Estella, don't make this mistake. At least marry someone worthier than him, someone who actually loves you."
"Drummle's a good match for me. Stop. You and I will never understand each other, and you'll stop thinking of me in a week."
"Stop thinking of you? You're part of my very existence. You've been in every line I've read since I met you, and you're in every view I look at and in every thought I have. You'll be a part of me even in the last minute of my life. God bless you, and God forgive you."
I kissed her hand. As I left, I noticed that Miss Havisham's face was full of pity and remorse. It was all finished. Everything that was important to me seemed to have disappeared. In a state of shock, I decided to walk all the way back to London to forget myself. When I got home, the night guard handed me a note written in Wemmick's writing. "Don't go home."